from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Stephen Cuevas in Los Angeles. Cristina Garcia launched her political career as an anti-government corruption crusader in South Los Angeles. After winning a seat in the state assembly 6 years ago, she became head of the California Legislative Women's Caucus. She also became a firebrand of the Me Too movement. Now she's facing her own accusations of sexual harassment. Details from Katie Orr.
As first reported by Politico, Democratic Assemblywoman Cristina Garcia has been accused of groping two men. Garcia is currently under legislative investigation following a complaint that she cornered and groped a staffer after the 2014 legislative softball game. Tila Schaff is Garcia's communications director.
She can confirm that she did attend the 2014 legislative softball game with a number of members and her staff. She also says she has zero recollection of engaging in any inappropriate behavior.
A second man told Politico Garcia groped him while at a Sacramento fundraiser in 2017. Garcia's picture was featured in Time magazine as one of the silence breakers in its Person of the Year issue. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
The Latino San Diego federal judge who was targeted by Donald Trump during the presidential campaign holds a hearing today. It's over legal challenges tied to the president's border wall project. Here's KPBS reporter Eric Anderson with details.
Environmental groups in the state of California argue the federal government doesn't have the right to waive a host of environmental laws to build prototypes and replace 17 miles of border wall in San Diego County. Brian Segui works for the Center for Biological Diversity. He says the administration is using waivers that were granted more than 10 years ago and no longer apply.
Waiver authority is not available, that it's essentially expired. It was meant for border fence construction that has already occurred, and that it is unconstitutional.
The state argues border wall construction would do irreparable harm to endangered wildlife. Federal Judge Gonzalo Curiel will preside over the border wall case in a San Diego courtroom. Curiel became famous in 2016 when the judge was repeatedly criticized over a period of months by then-presidential candidate Donald Trump for his handling of the Trump University lawsuit. In this CNN interview, Trump reiterated charges that the Indiana-born Curiel's heritage impacted his courtroom decisions.
We're building a wall. He's a Mexican. We're building a wall between here and Mexico. The answer is he is giving us very unfair rulings.
Curiel never responded to those attacks, and Trump agreed to settle the Trump University case for $25 million. Now Curiel will have a chance to rule on a case that could impact Trump's plans to build a wall where there currently isn't one. For the California Report, I'm Eric Anderson in San Diego.
Opponents of oil production in the waters off California gave a boisterous welcome to federal officials yesterday in Sacramento. It was at a public meeting all about a Trump administration plan to reopen those waters to drilling. KQED science editor Craig Miller was there.
What was billed as an open house was at times more of a circus. Unhappy with the informational format of it, protesters several times hijacked the event with chants of, "Where's the hearing?" Only written comments were taken from residents, many fearful of a catastrophic oil spill or burning more fossil fuels that drive global warming.
I think there are plenty of legitimate environmental concerns to be addressed.
Bill Brown is the chief environmental officer with the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management.
The downside of the hearing thing is you don't get to talk to, really interact, you know, with folks, and also everyone needs to sit there, and they only get their 2 minutes in the sun, basically. So we did this not because we're against hearings, but we just thought it was a more effective way to communicate.
This was the only scheduled meeting in California on the proposal to lease new federal waters for oil and gas development, something that's permanently banned in state waters up to 3 miles from shore. The plan is a long way from being approved and implemented, but state officials, including Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, have vowed to block any newly produced offshore oil from being piped ashore in California. For the California Report, I'm Craig Miller in Sacramento.
There's a new state study that reports a drop in the number of Californians using handheld cell phones while they drive, really. But as KQED's Dan Brecky reports, there's still lots of you still texting and talking behind the wheel.
The study for the state's Office of Traffic Safety is based on roadside observations of more than 200 sites in 17 counties around the state. Based on what observers saw, the report estimates 1 in 28 drivers are using handheld cell phones at any given time. The overall rate of cell phone use is much higher, with surveys consistently finding more than half of drivers admit to texting, talking, or doing other tasks while they operate motor vehicles. The new study found the highest rate of cell phone driving in San Bernardino County, with 1 in 12 drivers using handheld devices. The lowest rate? Monterey County, with fewer than 1 in 100 drivers on the phone. For the California Report, I'm Dan Brecky.
An asylum seeker was arrested by immigration agents in San Francisco yesterday while still attending his asylum hearing. That's according to immigration attorney Caleb Aring. He says his client was seeking asylum in the U.S. because he had been tortured for being a political activist in Sudan. Aring says immigration and customs enforcement agents came into the office and arrested his client at the end of an interview with an asylum officer.
Applying for asylum is really meant to be a sanctuary for people who are fleeing terrible situations in their country. So the idea that we would arrest someone at their asylum interview is very shocking.
Aring says agents only told him that his client had overstayed a visa. He expects his client to post bond possibly as early as today. An ICE spokesman in San Francisco did not respond to requests for comment. The San Francisco Health Commission voted this week to support the opening of a safe drug injection site. Here's details from KQED's Michelle Wiley.
While drug consumption sites have long existed in Canada and in cities across Europe, this would be the first location in the United States. Such injection sites allow users a safe place to shoot up intravenous drugs while being monitored by health officials. Dr. Navina Baba with the San Francisco Department of Public Health says the service is one way the city aims to reduce harm.
They reduce HIV cases, hepatitis C cases, they reduce emergency room visits, they can link people to services, including treatment services.
According to a report from the San Francisco Health Commission, more than 22,000 people inject drugs in the city. Since 2006, overdose deaths have ranged between 160 to 200 people annually. Opening the facilities could have federal and state repercussions, as IV drug use is not legal. State Democratic lawmakers are working on solidifying support for a bill that would protect safe injection sites. For now, the San Francisco Department of Public Health is exploring locations across the city and expects to open their first site by July 1st. For the California Report, I'm Michelle Wiley.
Citing a Gold Rush-era state law on hydraulic mining, Butte County District Attorney Mike Ramsey on Wednesday announced a multi-billion-dollar lawsuit against the State Department of Water Resources. The lawsuit is over environmental damage caused by debris cut loose in last year's near disaster at the Oroville Dam. From North State Public Radio in Chico, Mark Albert explains.
The provision, Fish and Game Code Section 5650, prohibits the dumping of soil, slag, petroleum, or any other materials damaging to fish, birds, plants, or mammals into any waterway in the state. The statute followed environmental devastation caused by 19th century hydraulic mining. According to District Attorney Ramsey, debris dumping began on February 7th last year when small cracks turned into a large pothole on the Oroville Dam's main spillway. That culminated in the evacuation of more than 180,000 people. In the course of a week, the main spillway broke apart, the emergency spillway neared failure, and parts of two hillsides were washed downriver. Ramsey told reporters in Oroville that the Fish and Game Code provides clear guidelines for damages.
$10 per pound times 2,000 to 3,000 pounds per cubic yard times 1.7 million cubic yards adds up to a maximum of $51 billion.
And yes, that's billion with a B. Erin Mellon, a spokeswoman for the Department of Water Resources, said the department does not comment on pending litigation. Ramsey's suit identifies plaintiffs as the citizens of the state of California. The suit draws on information in a state report that found managers were aware of brittle underlying rock and deficiencies in the spillway as it was being built more than a half century ago. Ramsey says the case has merit and that official states of emergency or emergency orders don't just allow dumping of debris into the water.
I have standing as the district attorney of the county to bring such an action. Emergency declarations were not emergency permits. By that time, the damage had already been done.
Although the complaint does not specifically call for it, Ramsey says the suit could lead to oversight of the dam being transferred away from the Department of Water Resources. Where to? Possibly the Federal Bureau of Reclamation, operator of Shasta Dam. For the California Report, I'm Mark Albert in Oroville.
The San Joaquin County Sheriff Coroner is under intense fire for allegedly mishandling death investigations. KQED's Julie Small has been reporting on problems that led two county pathologists to resign and also prompted several lawsuits. Now she tells us about the anguish families went through when the bodies of their loved ones got mixed up with somebody else's. And just a warning here, there are some graphic details that some listeners may find disturbing.
They told her they made a mistake. They had released the wrong body, and the wrong body had been cremated, and that the ashes that were there at the funeral belonged to another person.
And so here you have this family that's actively grieving, and they get this news from the sheriff coroner's office. What's their reaction?
Just completely, you know, emotionally blown away that they had gone through all this. So it was very distressful to them, and the mother and his son ended up filing a lawsuit against the county.
So whose ashes did the family have in their possession?
They had the ashes of a man named John Rogers, who was found in a public parking lot in Lodi. He was brought to the morgue about a month before Marvin Rogers was. And, of course, they have the same last name. And so when it came time to release Marvin Rogers, they accidentally released John Rogers.
So what's at the root of the mix-ups in the San Joaquin office under the direction of Sheriff Steve Moore?
We're not sure how it happened. We just know that it did. The sheriff's office did not respond to a request for an interview. They referred those questions to their legal counsel.
So, Julie, what kind of reforms are being put in place to assure that these kinds of incidents, like these body mix-ups, no longer occur?
Well, first off, the county has hired an expert to come in and review how the sheriff coroner's office is functioning now, make suggestions for improvements, but also to present the county with information about switching to a different system where an independent medical examiner is conducting all the death investigations for the county.
That was KQED's Julie Small. The Winter Olympic Games commence today in South Korea, and there are nearly two dozen Team USA athletes from here in California competing in Pyeongchang. About a quarter of them are figure skaters, and that includes 18-year-old Karen Chen from the city of Fremont. She's a first-time Olympian, and she'll be joining a team that includes one of her childhood figure skating idols and fellow Californian, Mirai Nagasu, someone Chen says she's looked up to since the 2010 Winter Olympics.
I cheered her on, and I told all my friends that she was going to get a medal at the Olympics. Like, I believed in her so much, and it's just so amazing that I've come this far, and I am going to Olympics with her.
California athletes are also looking to bring home the gold in several other events, including ice hockey, snowboarding, skiing, and my favorite, the bobsled. And that's the California Report for Friday, February 9th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Seal Mahler, and Howard Gelman. Also working on the Cal Report this week, Tiffany Kamhai, Polly Stryker, Guy Marzorati, Nina Thorson, and Ingrid Becker. From KQED's Los Angeles Bureau, I'm Stephen Cuevas.